Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, March 30th. And believe it or not, this is our last show for the month of March, because the next time we talk to you, it'll be April 1st or Thursday. So that just kind of gives you an idea of how fast this year is just absolutely flying by. And I'm looking out my window and I see another gorgeous day here in Dallas. Obviously, spring is here. Sometime next week, we'll be talking a little baseball because the baseball season starts on Monday. So I guess a lot of good things are coming together. A lot of good things always come together at the start of the baseball season. We're going to be doing a show with our friend Paul Greco. We'll probably do that Sunday night, although we have not confirmed a time yet. But either Sunday night or Monday, we will do our baseball show. Maybe Saturday night, because Sunday being Easter, that might not be a good day to get together. But anyway, Easter Sunday, that is. So we're going to try to do our baseball show. But a lot of good things happen now that the baseball season is finally lining up. Today we're going to be talking with Randall Hovind, who is a contributor to American Thinker. Those of you who check out American Thinker, as I do every day, you will recognize that Randall, or Randy as we know him, has been writing a lot of good articles about the economy, and today we're going to be talking about this healthcare bill that was passed a week or so ago. We'll be talking a little bit about some of the things that Randy doesn't like about it. I find it interesting that a lot of businesses are now starting to react to this bill, and they're basically saying, you know, we got to raise taxes, or, you know, we got to cut this and we cut that. And a lot of the Democrats are almost reacting in anger, almost as if, how dare these companies react that way. But, you know, that's what happens when you have taxes and you have mandates and all of that. Companies obviously have to, they have to pay taxes. They have to react to the new law, and that is happening. And we'll get into a little bit of that with Randy Hovind in a few minutes. And then on the second part of the show, we'll be talking with Mario Ingerto. And I've got a few questions for Mario. I've got to ask him a little bit about what is happening with U.S. Treasuries. I've read a couple of articles that the government is having a little difficulty selling Treasuries. Not a panic, but clearly some potential indications that we may be having a few problems at some point down the road. But let us turn on the microphone here and say hello to Randy Hovind. How are you, Randy?
Hi, Silvio. Am I late?
Well, let's say about 2 minutes, but okay. We'll forgive you for that. I've never met an economist or an engineer who's ever been on time.
So. I usually am. Okay.
Well, you gave me a chance, Randy. Well, I was waiting for you to show up. You gave me a chance to say a couple of things about spring and the baseball season, and the fact that a lot of things come together next week, because the baseball season starts, and that for many of us is a good time of the year. I'm sure you guys feel pretty good about your Cardinals this year.
Well, sure, just about every year. I'm going to the home opener this year on April 12th.
So they're opening the second week of the season then.
I guess so. Well, at least the home opener, yeah.
Yeah, right. They'll be opening on the road, huh? Well, I think the Cardinals had a pretty decent year. It's just too bad the way it ended. It was kind of a brutal way of ending the season, you know. But when they lost to the Dodgers. But anyway, we've been enjoying your articles a great deal in American Thinker, and today I wanted to pick your brain a little bit and get into as much as you can, some of the reasons why you don't like this what we like to call BoCare.
Obamacare. Okay.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I've kind of in my blog, I've gotten used to call it BoCare. I know other people call it Obamacare, but maybe I'm kind of lazy and would rather just say BoCare. But a lot of people have been talking about, you know, the attack on our freedom, the expansion of the federal government, and those things obviously are very important. But what are some of the things that you don't like about it? Some parts of the bill that really you just don't think will help us?
Well, first off, I don't. It's going to cost the federal government money. I don't believe for a minute there it's going to cut the deficits by $140 billion or whatever. That's too full of tricks and bad assumptions that we know aren't going to come true. I couldn't say it any better. I think if you saw that video or YouTube of Paul Ryan at that, I forget what it was called, that sort of conference when President Obama was there with Democrats and with Republicans, and the Republicans gave their spiel. And if you see that YouTube where Paul Ryan talks, it's awesome. He tells you everything wrong with Obamacare, you know, in 5 minutes. That, you know, I had to write about three different articles to come even as close to being articulate as he was in just 5 minutes off the cuff.
Yeah, I remember watching that. In fact, I put that video in my blog. I think that was probably... you're exactly right. That was the best 5-minute explanation of why this thing won't work. And how do we know that? Because did you see Obama's face?
Oh yeah, and didn't really come back. And no one ever, you know, they didn't go back. And I think Rush pointed this out. You know, if Paul Ryan was all wrong, you would have had everybody coming out of the woodwork and, you know, and saying how he's wrong. You know, there would be articles coming out the next day, the next week, saying, you know, Paul Ryan's wrong. But that never happened. So that's one thing. It's just going to cost the government more. And by the way, that's in the very aspect, you know, Obama even says, you know, things aren't sustainable in the government funding the budgets, the deficits, the debt. And it's the health care spending on the government side that's growing the fastest and making them go even more broke quicker. And this is not only not going to help this, it's going to make it worse. So that's number one. Number two is the cost to everyone else. You know, the only thing the Congressional Budget Office even scored was what it's going to do to federal money. But they even the CBO admitted that there's huge mandates that come under, I think there's some law where you can't have just unfunded mandates, but what it's going to cost individuals and employers and states, you know, because states have to administer, they're responsible for something like half of Medicaid administration and spending. Their costs are going to go up. So, you know, and this does nothing. Everybody talks about the cost curve in health. This doesn't bring the cost curve down. There's nothing in this that makes health insurance or health care cheaper. So it's going to cost everybody more money. Those are the first two. And then it is, I do believe, you know, for lack of a better word, it's the socialistic aspects of it, or the state controls more things and individuals less. And it's two or three thousand pages of legislation that even the people that passed it didn't read. So it's kind of, to me, it's like the blob that ate the United States. It's going to have just about everything in it, and an umbrella for the government to do almost anything at once, including, you know, they would deny that there's death panels in it, and I'm not going to say death panels, but there's like a board, I believe, that's supposed to control costs, and they get to make, say, what they're going to pay for and what they're not going to pay for, I believe.
I think you're exactly right on that. I mean, they don't say death panel. There's not like a clause that says this is called a death panel, but
right.
I think where Sarah Palin was going, and where many people like you and others and myself were going, is they won't be called death panels, but they're going to ration health in such a way that it will bring death to people. I think that was the whole point of it. I think death panels may have been, you know, a lot of people jumped on it on that and tried to say that she was making that up. No, I think she was exactly right, and that what they're doing is they're rationing, and when you ration Well, just ask the Canadians. You know, why do 40,000 Canadians come over here every year?
Yeah. And I don't know what people are going to do once we, you know, a lot of countries, I believe, sort of freeload on us. One is in the area of defense. But even in healthcare, you know, Canada itself, I forget, I think it was the, whatever you call him, the guy that was head of Nova Scotia, when he needed
heart surgery. Prime Minister of Nova Scotia.
He came to the U.S. And a reason, I think we develop, it's something like 60% of the world's new drugs or something like that. You know, when you start taking out the incentives for the United States medical industry to innovate, it's going to hurt everybody. And I think a lot of these countries that look like they're doing well because, well, basically they're free riding on the U.S.'s innovations.
That's exactly right. We're talking to Randall Hoven, Randy Hoven. He's a contributor to American Thinker, one of our favorite guests. And we always enjoy checking Randy's articles, especially those graphs, Randy, that you've been doing. Those are absolutely great. We congratulate you on that. You know, this point about the world freeloading on us, it's interesting because a lot of times you'll talk to – I'm kind of getting off the subject a little bit, but I think it ties into what you were saying about freeloading. A lot of times you'll talk to people from other countries, and they don't understand why we spend so much money on defense. And then I say to them, wait a minute, who are you going to call when an Iranian missile – is headed to your city? And they go, well, the United States. Well, then if we don't do it, you know, who's going to do it? So obviously we have to spend money on defense to defend them. That's true. And this point you make about the medicine is exactly right. I mean, we are the innovators. We're the country that as you say, puts out all those drugs, and that's an excellent point. I hadn't thought about that, but that's an excellent point.
It's what a lot of people miss. You know, when they see too many people have a static outlook on things. It's like, well, we know how to do what we're doing right now, and we don't need what they might call a middleman in the mix doing that for us. And that's just like the Soviets did originally, you know, back when things were basically steel and steel mills and maybe some agriculture. They could get away with it for a while because you didn't need to innovate. You know, if they would just make more steel mills, they could put out more steel, and we knew how to make steel back then. But after a few decades, it became clear that they were not growing, innovating, or anything else. They were falling further and further behind everyone else because the rest of us move on and innovate. And it's what doesn't show up right away because you think you're getting away with things because you can, you know, kind of do them the same way you have been doing it, but it's kind of hard to explain. People don't, but they won't miss what they're not going to get so much, and it's kind of a shame that people don't see that coming.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're saying about the deficit is an interesting point because that has consequences. If we were not already running the deficits that we're running, you know, 10% of GDP, then maybe a deficit of this nature not necessarily would be sustainable, but would be sustainable a little bit longer. But when you have the deficit we already have, and then on top of that, you add all of this spending, I mean, I don't know how we're going to do it. I mean, I keep looking at different graphs, and I keep reading different things. Randy, I don't know how we're going to do it. I mean, at some point in time, the battery is going to run out, as they say.
It's called unsustainable. and one of it, the CBO actually scored – Paul Ryan's got a bigger plan of how to deal with entitlements and the debt. And I thought it was kind of funny when they tried to project the budget and the debt if we don't do anything, their model just breaks down in like 46 years. It's like it won't even work past there because the math, you know, I don't know what they get a division by zero or something, but it doesn't even work. You know, their model won't even allow it to crank the numbers. And what some people, I guess, it is now a structural deficit. You know, you go back and say, well, we've survived big deficits and debts before. Look at after World War II or something. Well, the World War II debt was due to World War II. When the war is over, you kind of go back and you can start paying it off. And in history, we would run up debts usually with some kind of war, and then between wars, we'd pay off that debt. The debt we have now is not temporary. In fact, it gets worse and worse. Everything already built into the budget makes the debt grow even faster. It's not like, well, we just need to get through this crisis and then pay it off. There is no payoff time. Every projection you look at, it just gets worse and worse. You have to actually cut something, and what we're going to have to cut is the entitlements.
Yeah. Go ahead and finish.
I guess some people think, well, we can always raise taxes. You know, the government can always get more money. But you don't necessarily get more revenue just because you raise tax rates. You know, Japan's been doing this for about 20 years now, and they've had the slowest growth of any country, you know, any of the developed countries. It's had just super slow growth, and they're swamped with debt right now, too.
Yeah, when you're talking about the structural problems, this is something that I had a discussion about this with a lady a couple of days ago, because you know, she was talking about how all these deficits were the result of the war in Iraq, and you know, the usual garbage that they tell you. I mean, they want to blame the war in Iraq for everything, including the diet that doesn't work, you know, if you know what I mean. But I try to explain to this lady that, look, you know, 60% of the federal budget is untouchable. Roughly 60%.
Right.
And much of it is entitlements, which is what you're talking about. And then on top of that, you have this huge baby boomer population that is going to go into these entitlements here for the next 10 to 15 years. You're already seeing, Randy, I think you've written about this, you're already seeing how Social Security, I think for the first time, is putting out more money than taking in. Now, it can survive a while, but it cannot survive forever. So at this point, I keep saying, you know, when are we going to wake up one morning and find out we're in a real financial crisis? And I don't know. I don't know what day that's going to be, but it cannot be that far down the road. I mean, this is not sustainable, as we keep on saying.
I just can't believe the stock market. It's as if nothing's really wrong. It's like everybody's sleepwalking their way through this. And to me, it's like, there's going to be a crisis. I mean, what they call it unsustainable, even Obama calls it unsustainable. If it's unsustainable, it cannot be sustained. That means something's got to change and something's going to happen. And our only choice is the something that's going to happen, some catastrophic kind of thing, or do we get out of it gracefully? And we're not doing anything to get out of it gracefully. You know, we know the federal government is going broke, running up debt. That's just wild, and we're adding a major new entitlement to it. The very program that's growing the fastest, causing the biggest debt, Medicare, Medicaid, and we're adding to that. And this isn't just, you know, us crazy right-wingers or something. If you read Robert Samuelson in the Washington Post, Samuelson, he's described it over multiple articles by now. Just the numbers don't add up. We don't even need to get into, is it socialism or not? It's just grossly irresponsible budgeting.
Go ahead.
When they say it's going to cut deficits, that's total trickery with the numbers, and everybody knows it.
Yeah, this is not a right-wing conspiracy anymore.
No.
I mean, if you know what I mean. You know, this is, you know, when we say these things, you know, this is not the right-wing conspiracy. This is... you know, the truth. You mentioned, you know, the Medicare and Social Security, or entitlements in general, and then you talked about taxes. There's two great articles. I just haven't had a chance to read them. They came out today. One in the Wall Street Journal by a fellow named Reynolds. I haven't read it, in which he basically says that the rich people are not going to be able to pay Obamacare. We just don't have that many rich people to do it. And the other one is Professor Victor Davis Hanson, who's a great national security writer. He's great. And he writes a lot about national security, but he wrote today something along the lines, and I haven't read it, but I'm kind of paraphrasing the title, but something along the lines that, you know, hey, Medicare isn't working, Social Security isn't working, so what are we doing? We're creating another entitlement.
Exactly.
But I think, well, you know, if there's a silver lining to this, Randy, is the fact that I think more and more people are catching on to it, and I think the rebellion, if you want to call it that, has been fairly substantial, and more you're seeing states, and I think that's where a lot of the pressure is going to come from states simply saying, we cannot afford this. This is not states' rights. This is simply, we cannot afford it,
well,
hopefully
sure
that'll
so.
Do it.
I sure hope so. Slowly people are waking up, but it's still barely there. Obama hovers around 50%. Even this BO care is getting at least 40% support. And to me, they should both be getting single digits. I mean, this is crazy that things are this crazy, yet they're still roughly near 50-50. It just flabbergasts me. I don't know what it takes to finally see through this.
Have you looked at all at some of these problems that some of these companies are having, like AT&T and Verizon? I mean, that's just to name two of them. But other companies that have been writing off or being forced to write off. Do you know anything about that? Have you followed that at all?
I've read some of the stories. I think there's three came out in one day and maybe another today or yesterday. And ironically, they have to be honest. You know, they're publicly traded companies, and they have to say anything that's going to affect their bottom line. They're like, by law, have to do that. They can't hide the prospects for their company's financial outlook. That's part of what the SEC enforces. Yet when they say what they think this is going to cost them, they're getting some grief from the Obama administration that they're, you know, bad-mouthing the Obama health care plan.
In other words, these companies have to do real accounting. They cannot do hope and change.
Right.
They actually have to do accounting.
Yes, they have to have numbers that add up, and they're not adding up in their favor. Which I totally believe. I don't think I have to redo their numbers for them, but I'll take their word for it.
Most of these, like you say, they're publicly traded companies, so they have auditors and CPA firms that say, hey, you got to do this, you got to do that.
Right. They can't hide the numbers even if they wanted to.
That's right. That's right.
Unless they want to get sued later for it.
Let's talk about the deficit. One last question here. You were talking about the deficit. Right now, if my numbers are right, we're looking at a deficit of about $1.4 trillion at the end of the fiscal year, which would be September 30th. Do you see that getting any better or getting any worse?
I would expect it to get worse. I think every time they've reestimated it, it gets a little worse. And I was going to say, you were saying about Victor Davis Hanson saying the rich people don't have this money. I think a big reason we're running even bigger than normal deficits right now is because receipts aren't coming in. It's not just all on the spending side. They're not getting the revenue. And I think a lot of that is because the tax code is so progressive that they get so much from the upper incomes that when upper income people catch a cold, the budget catches pneumonia kind of thing. And that especially happens in, like, California. They had so much of their tax base coming from, like, Silicon Valley and a lot of the big money places that when the, call it the rich people or the big money entities take a hit, it's a super big hit on government revenues. You know, we've only come down, I don't think our GDP went down 4%, but government revenues went down, like, 25%. It's, you know, and that's because we're so progressive and we already get so much money from the top end of the income scale. So it's not there to get.
Just cranking up
a tax rate here and there, it doesn't mean you're going to crank in more money. And I think too many people think that's the case.
There are also the unintended consequences that if you raise taxes, these people may decide not to start the businesses that, you know, ended up creating more revenue because – I mean, there is a point in time where people say, you know, it's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Not worth it. And I think that's the other thing. One quick question. I saw something the last couple of days, and I don't know if you saw this, about U.S. Treasuries, that they're not moving as fast as...
They're harder to sell.
Do you know anything about that?
Well, I've read that. I don't know the numbers, just that they might have to crank up. Well, one thing they said, Warren Buffett's and some of the other bonds are actually sell cheaper than the U.S. bonds, which means people consider the Warren Buffett-type bonds actually safer than the United States bonds, which is pretty remarkable if you think about it. I mean, United States bonds are not the most trusted bonds in the world.
That is a shock, yeah.
That should scare everyone's wits out of their wits.
No, you're exactly right. But here's an idea for a graph. I know you're you love doing these graphs, and maybe I can give you an idea, or maybe there's an idea for an article. But if you take if we have to find $1.4 trillion in October, let's say, and we had to find $1.4 trillion last October, that's roughly $2.8 trillion we've had to borrow. If you think about that, that's almost the size of the Chinese economy that we've had to borrow. At some point, Randy, at some point, the people just aren't out there. I mean, at some point, you know, it's like you can only sell so much until you run out of people who can buy your bonds. So either you raise interest rates, I guess, or how do you do it? Do you understand my point that at some point we're going to run out of people who can buy it? The world just isn't that big.
I've read a few things. It's like something has to go bad, but it gets fuzzy what exactly will go bad. I mean, one is just defaulting on debt, just not paying it off. Another is inflation or hyperinflation, which means it might get paid off, but the dollars won't be worth as much. They'll probably try to raise taxes, and then I'm sure they're going to find out they don't get the money they thought they'd get, and all they're going to do is stifle growth. It seems like I'm afraid that things don't go bad gradually. They'll just go bad kind of catastrophically, like a bridge falling down, you know. So many people, you know, Paul Krugman or somebody can say, well, okay, so far we're not, you know, things aren't terrible. And then but one day it's all, just the bottom's going to fall out.
Well, the one thing that I would keep an eye on is some of these economies in the States, like California.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a huge economy. If that economy hits the fan, if that state has to default on some of its obligations, that is a, I mean, you talk about Greece. I mean, this would be 10 times bigger than Greece.
Well, so far, nobody's actually paying anything off. All everyone's doing is borrowing even more money. And you can't do that forever, I don't think, although Japan's is coming close. I don't actually know how Japan sticks in there, but they've at least suffered in slow economic growth. I mean, very slow growth. And some people that have done studies said when the debt of a country gets so high, in fact, over 90% of its GDP, you take about a 1% hit in GDP growth. 1% sounds small, but when it only grows 2 to 3%, that means a lot. It means you're only growing half as fast as you normally would or something like that.
That's exactly right. Well, Randy, we're going to have to wrap it up, but as always, we're so grateful for your contributions, and we're so grateful for your articles. And as I said at the beginning of the show, with a lot of this stuff is very depressing, and it is really very depressing. So for people like you and me, we've got the baseball season next week, so at least we can get our minds off of this.
I was just at an economics conference, and that's a pretty humorless group of people.
Yes, I would think so.
They don't
call
it the dismal science for nothing, I guess.
No, but you know, I mean, without being doom and gloom, there is a lot of concern. I am very concerned about the U.S. economy. I think we're flirting with a lot of danger here, and you cannot do that over and over without.
I think everyone should also know it's not really unique to the U.S. You know, Obama's not doing anything to help us, but the whole Western world, the whole developed world, the debt problems are just all over. You know, the United Kingdom probably actually has it worse than us, and they're talking about Greece going in default any day now. It's pretty widespread. We are not alone in that.
These are all democracies.
And
they're all democracies, so all of their problems have something to do with entitlements, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I mean, that's the common denominator of this whole crisis is entitlements.
There'll be no place to run, no place to hide, and no one to bail out the bailouters.
That's right, and no place to get medical care, because I certainly don't want to go to England to get medical care.
Right.
I mean, they're having a lot of problems rationing over there as well, from what I hear. So
we'll join Russia and Costa Rica.
That's it. We'll all move to Costa Rica, and then And then who knows what happens, but you're right. At least for the short term, we can all have a lot of fun down in Costa Rica. But, Randy, thank you very much. Have a wonderful Easter week and a good Easter Sunday, you and your family. And I hope everything goes well for you in 2010. I know it's going to be a tough year for the economy, but I congratulate you so much on all these articles that you write. You keep us informed, to say the least.
Okay, thank you, and hope you have a nice week in Easter.
Okay, you have a great day, and we will be right back right after this.
All right, bye-bye.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, March 30th, and of course, that was Randall Hoven, better known as Randy Hoven. Randy writes for American Thinker, and we've had him on the show several times. Very interesting gentleman. He can explain all of this stuff in a very easy way, and he has these graphs that he publishes over at the American Thinker website, and these graphs have a way of explaining everything in a very, very simple way, which is what I think you have to do when you're talking about such complicated problems. I thought it was very interesting, the three things that he doesn't like about, I wrote them down as he was explaining them, the three things that he doesn't like. Number one, the deficit, of course, which is horrendous. The second, the cost to the states. And number three, the idea of having the state controlling healthcare, the idea of having a federal solution or a state solution, the idea that the government knows what to do. And it's interesting because those are exactly the three things that I don't like about it. There may be some things in this law that we could agree on in a different law. For example, pre-existing conditions, I can see where, you know, we can do something about that. Clearly, on reducing cost, there are some things we can do about it. But the whole focus of this bill, having the federal government take over healthcare, I think that's what a lot of people like me just look at this thing and we say, you know what, this isn't going to work. I mean, we look at the problems we're having with Medicare and look at the problems we're having with Social Security. So here we come, on top of those two problems, we're going to put a third problem. Well, it just isn't going to work. And I think, as Randy was saying, it's just unsustainable. And I don't know, you know, we keep saying it's unsustainable. We keep saying it's unsustainable. You know, it's like you keep telling somebody that the roof on their house, on their home is not sustainable, and one of these days it's going to collapse. And in fact, eventually it will. And I think that's what worries me most about the situation right now. And I don't know. We may have to face some of these problems before we take it seriously. Another point that Randy made, which is very interesting, and we spoke with Mario and Gerto about this a couple of weeks ago, and that is this whole idea that all of these democratic governments around the world all seem to be having the same problem, and that is they cannot pay for their entitlements, that they have basically promised more than they can deliver. And I think that that's something that is affecting a lot of the economies around the world, and something that you're going to see a lot of collapses of countries that simply cannot pay their bills, and they simply cannot raise taxes any more than they have already. I mean, we tend to forget that countries in Europe are already taxing their populations 50-60%. Not exactly a lot more you can tax people when you've got rates of that type. Well, we thought we were going to get a phone call today from Mario. I know he's traveling, and he's on a business trip, I think, in the East Coast, so maybe he just got sidelined. And we'll try to have him on Thursday. We were going to talk with Mario about some of these treasuries and the problems that the government is having selling them. So we're going to put that off until the next time. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas saying thank you very much for listening. Once again, it's a lovely day here in Dallas. I think spring is finally here, and we are looking forward to the fact that in a couple of shows we're going to be talking about baseball, and next week it'll be baseball time, and that always makes me very happy. All right, we're going to move on, and we'll talk to you the next time.